From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in San Ramon.
Larkspur in Marin County.
Simpson Beach.
I live in Noe Valley in Novato.
I live in San Anselmo right next to Fairfax.
Coming up, local Armenians commemorate the 1915 Armenian Genocide.
And you get people saying like, oh, 100 years, it does not matter. That 100 years ago was yesterday.
And a young Armenian American explores his generation's feelings around the mass killing.
I want recognition, but I don't want to wait another 100 years for Turkey to play catch up.
Plus, we'll tell you about an Armenian connection unique to San Francisco.
Pilaf, Armenian way. She taught me how to make that. We would bring her golden grain vermicelli.
Armenian San Francisco, today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. On top of the highest hill in San Francisco is the Mount Davidson Cross, a monument to the Armenian Genocide. Tomorrow marks 100 years since the Ottoman Empire began to kill what would eventually be 1.5 million Armenians. Waves of Armenians immigrated to the Bay Area, fleeing the killings. Today, 30,000 people of Armenian descent live here. The Ottoman Empire is now modern-day Turkey. Historians call what happened a genocide. The Turkish government says it was the result of war. President Obama won't call it a genocide because he doesn't want to alienate Turkey, an important ally in the Middle East. The centennial has drawn the attention of the Pope, the European Union, and the UC Berkeley Student Senate. It passed a bill calling on the school to sell off all investments in the Turkish government.
Aye.
The motion passes unanimously.
Earlier this week, Armenian musicians gave a free concert in Union Square. And on Friday, San Francisco City Hall will feature Armenian dances and speakers. The family of KALW's Jeremy Dalmas came to San Francisco as part of the Armenian diaspora. He brings us this story of what it means to be Armenian 100 years after the genocide.
So this is the first floor of our school.
This picture is that the kids made?
Those are the kids made, yes.
Principal Grace Andonian shows me Armenian sayings along with illustrations by students.
So, for example, hair started growing on my tongue, which means that I have been repeating this over and over and over and over again.
We're at KZV Armenian School in San Francisco. I am a half Armenian, and I went to elementary school in San Francisco, but I didn't go here.
Another one is put an earring on your ear, means keep it in your mind.
Remember it,
yeah.
To me, these two idioms perfectly describe what it can be like to be an Armenian American and talk about the Armenian Genocide. It is so important to remember and to commemorate it, but at the same time, it can dominate the conversation. When we talk about ourselves to the world, this is what we talk about. Stories about the genocide follow a script, and they always sound something like this.
We have come to the desert in northern Syria to look for evidence of a mass murder.
The Armenian Genocide began under the cover of World War I. By 1923, 1.5 million Armenians were dead.
To this day, Turkey denies the genocidal intent of these mass murders.
But I want to try and tell my own story. A story not about what I know, but about how I feel. I want to understand how I feel today about something that happened 100 years ago to my ancestors. My grandfather was born in Erzurum, a city that's now in eastern Turkey. When the genocide started, his family was marched out of town towards Syria. He watched his father beheaded and then was forced to walk in circles in the desert, where his baby sister died because their mother couldn't nurse her. Somehow, he managed to escape westward, and in the 1920s, brought his family to San Francisco, where he set up a grocery shop in the Mission. I remember when I first heard the details about what happened to my grandfather. I was a kid, a few years younger than he probably was. The next day, I went on the playground and told other kids that my grandfather had watched his father murdered in front of him. And then I felt instantly guilty about it. Because I was boasting. Look what makes us unique and different. I suppose it was my way of processing it. It's that tug both ways. I want to remember, but how do I talk about this? As a child, I struggled with that. And I still do now. Many Armenian Americans feel the issue will remain unresolved until Turkey recognizes what their ancestors did to ours. But do I need that acknowledgement? Maybe if I hear that denial, it will strike a nerve.
I don't know anything about it, but I want to know the truth. I think we should leave it up to the historians and let history decide.
That's an online video by a Turkish group called Let History Decide. Their message is that historians should look at the facts and decide whether or not it was a genocide, as if that hasn't been happening already for decades.
Let history decide.
Let history decide.
They show the faces of people from around the world who all repeat the same phrase.
Let history decide.
Let history decide.
They're from Miami, Honduras, Maryland, and then...
Let history decide.
They show a picture of someone from Erzurum, the city my grandfather was born in. The man is looking out at me and saying everything my grandfather experienced never happened. Watching this made me hold my head in my hands and stumble across the room. It feels like this man is trying to personally attack me and is enjoying doing it. I could say that I won't be able to move on from this until the genocide is recognized by people like him, but do I have that luxury? What if they never do? And it makes me wonder how this feels for other Armenians like me. So I spend hours talking with other Armenians about it. Specifically to Armenians of my generation, around 30. How do they feel 100 years on? Hazmik Gengamian is a 32-year-old civil and human rights lawyer who lives in Oakland. She tells me April is a delicate month for her. On the 24th, the day we commemorate the genocide, she takes it especially easy.
I take the day off, and I light a candle, I pray, I burn some sage, I call in my ancestors, I remember them. Sometimes I partake in a march, sometimes I just want to be in silence, somewhere in nature. I think we're a testament to how something 100 years ago still impacts us.
33-year-old Greg Nemet feels the same way. He's lived in the Bay Area for 13 years and is involved with an Armenian fraternal organization called Knights of Vartan.
And you get people saying like, oh, 100 years does not matter. That 100 years ago was yesterday. It's because of the burden that we carry, you know? We process constantly.
I definitely process. But do I feel burdened? As much as I am thinking about this, I still don't know what I feel. I also spoke with his sister, 28-year-old Rose Nemet.
Got hit with the Armenian activist bug right after college. It's very much part of who I am.
She talks about how it's difficult to keep explaining to non-Armenians the importance of the genocide.
I feel like it's my responsibility to do so, that I don't want to relinquish to somebody else. But on the other hand, it's like, why is the onus on me to spend all of my time doing this over and over again? It's like reliving it.
It sounds like for her, there is that tug back and forth, but for a different reason. For her, it's too painful, whereas for me, I think I want to feel the pain. I wanted to understand more.
Why do you think that something that happened at this point 100 years ago is, like, affecting you today?
Yeah. Her brother answers.
It's because it's so close to home. That child that was walked through the desert, that's my relative. That's my brother. That's my sister, you know?
Rose Nemet jumps back in.
Being a part of a people where your genocide is still under question, you know, still kind of up for debate, you feel like you have to state your case to everybody. Like, you're accused of something. Like, literally, like, Tim, for me, that, like, goes from zero to hit you in the face, you know, in seconds.
Then she turns the question back around to me.
I'd love to hear how you feel about that. Do you still feel like you carry it with you? Maybe not as... I'm wondering if the volume is high or if it's off or...
Okay. Moment of truth. I'm obviously still talking about the genocide, but do I feel it? Maybe that's the issue. I care about it, and I think about it, but it feels distant. And I can't make myself feel things that I do not feel. Then I worry that I'm being Armenian wrong. But Greg Nemet brings me back down to earth.
So I see an Armenian person when I'm talking to you. You have as much right as that guy, or as that woman, or as anybody. That's it. End of story. That's it.
It feels good to hear him say that. Maybe that's what I needed to hear. I have definitely felt that by not being Armenian enough, I am a living symbol that the genocide was successful. I think that's something that a lot of Armenians feel. It's silly, but it's real.
I was like, oh, like, me not being Armenian, does that mean, like, Turkey won? Like, you know?
And, like, I think we're all laughing because we all have these, like, little checklists in our heads that say Turkey won. You know, like, if they're not, you know, like, if we don't hit all those bases.
So, if we're struggling with this at 30, I wanted to know how an even younger generation feels. Back at the Armenian school, I meet Principal Grace Andonian.
We'll be going into the 8th grade.
Okay, boys and girls. Follow Sherry.
What did you just say to me?
Good afternoon.
Oh, good afternoon to you as well.
Me and about 15 8th graders all sit in a circle on the floor of their class. They're all wearing their school uniforms and are excited to talk with me. This is the first generation to grow up without family members who went through the genocide. I asked the students if they've ever met any survivors. They haven't. Jennifer Kazarian answers me.
Last year, someone died, a survivor. That was the last known survivor of the Armenian genocide in the Bay Area.
They know all about the genocide. I ask a question and their hands shoot up. Eighth grader Caroline Amanian explains how she feels about people talking about the genocide.
The Armenian genocide isn't like the only Armenian, like, it doesn't define Armenians. Like, we have over like 3,000 years of history, and after people recognize the Armenian genocide, we can kind of move forward and have people recognize our culture, like, and all that.
And that, like, you don't want to, like, be defined.
No.
By the genocide.
No, I don't think that's really right.
As I get ready to leave, they recite a poem for me, celebrating Armenian culture.
Son, tam ye varujan, yelekna kirchov yerketsi parker, kezi enza im hayrenik, sosyan
tandarene. If this were your usual Armenian genocide piece, this would be where I talk about how I can't rest until the genocide is recognized by Turkey. Except, for me, personally, I choose for that not to be true. I want recognition, but I don't want to wait another 100 years for Turkey to play catch-up. I don't want the darkness to continue to dominate my relationship with my culture. I've done my genocide piece. Next time you tune in, it'll be a piece about this great new Armenian queer magazine I found, about me trying to discover Armenian paganism, or about my famous Armenian cousin, Cher. This will be my way of celebrating my ancestors. I'll keep the earring in my ear to remember, but I want to stop repeating this. No more hair on my tongue.
Zangir zargi zeng zeng galeyna.
For Cross Currents, I'm Jeremy Dalmas.
A commemoration of the centennial of the genocide will be held tomorrow night at San Francisco City Hall, beginning at 7:15. More information is at kalw.org. Click Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. We just heard from KALW's Jeremy Dalmas, who explored his Armenian heritage. And if you look, you can find more examples of the Armenian legacy here in the Bay Area. William Saroyan, an Armenian-American writer and playwright in Oakland, won the Pulitzer Prize for drama in 1940. And as it turns out, the San Francisco Treat is also of Armenian descent. That's right, rice-a-roni, a box dish of rice, pasta, and seasonings, is based off of traditional Armenian rice pilaf. Bay Area radio makers, the Kitchen Sisters, decided to track down the original pilaf recipe that started it all.
Rice-a-roni, the San Francisco Treat. I'm Lois DiDomenico. I grew up in Edmonton, Canada. I met my husband Tommy in 1944 in San Francisco. His father and his brothers and he had a pasta factory. When the war was over, there was no place to live. All these hundreds of thousands of soldiers were coming home. So I saw this ad that said, lady who lived alone would like to rent out one room of her apartment. Mrs. Kaptanian. I had a liking for her right away. So we moved in. Tommy would work until, 7 o'clock every night at Golden Grain Pasta Company. I was alone a lot. I was only 18, and I was pregnant, and I had kitchen privileges. Well, I really wasn't much of a cook. And here was this Armenian lady, probably about 70 at the time, making yogurt on the back of the stove all day, every day. I didn't even know what the word yogurt meant.
My grandmother's name was Pailadzu Kaptanian. Grandma Kap is what we called her. My name is Ted Kaptanian. She babysat us when we were 4 or 5 years old. She would always be wanting to cook us stuffed grape leaves, baklava, and rice pilaf.
Pilaf, Armenian way. She taught me how to make that. We would bring her Golden Grain vermicelli. She wanted us to break it as small as rice if we could. The kitchen was teeny tiny, like a closet. But right around the corner was a huge big round table. And when she rolled out her dough for baklava, she would roll and roll until every bit of that dining room table was covered with this sheet of phyllo dough. She would hold it up and she would say, see, Lois, you have to be able to see through the dough. I can remember sitting there and Mrs. Kaptanian telling me her life story. She was in Armenia 1915, 16, when the massacre happened, which, by the way, the Turkish people still don't agree that it ever happened. She was pregnant with one child and had two other boys.
This is a copy of her book, her memoirs of that exodus from Armenia. She wanted to guarantee that somebody knew what happened.
My name is Meline Pelivanyan, working in the Berlin State Library as the Armenia and Turkey specialist. About 15 years ago, I found by chance this little book from Pailadzu Kaptanian. It is a rare book. There are not so much first-hand memoirs of this time. It was 1915, the deportation of the Armenian population of Turkey began. Pailadzu Kaptanian left her two little sons with a Greek family. She knew that it would be death for all the Armenians. About 2 weeks later, the husband of Pilatso is killed.
Where are my two children whom I abandoned? My heart is breaking with longing to see them again. Alone at night, I repeat cradle songs for their sake. And while I tell
Mrs. Captanian wrapped her feet in rags and walked through the Middle East.
There were only women, little children, and old men. They walked about 12 hours a day through mountains, and there were no food or little food.
Eventually, my grandmother made it to Syria, where she gave birth to my father after having walked for months to escape.
I used to sit in Mrs. Captanian's kitchen and listen to this amazing story of this woman. When I left her apartment, we got our own flat, and I made her Armenian pilaf a lot. One night, my husband and his brother Vincent were eating pilaf in my kitchen. Vincent looked at it, and he took it apart, and he said, you know, this would be great in a box.
We had a kitchen down in the plant. He would cook the dish up, and we would taste it. I would bring home some samples and ask my wife how she liked it. Shake it, baby, shake it, cause I love it when we needed a name for the product. We were saying, well, what is the product? Rice and macaroni. Why don't we call it Rice-a-roni? The name had a ring to it.
Rice-a-roni, the San Francisco treat.
Rice-a-roni, the delicious break from potatoes.
There were not very many packaged side dishes in the market in 1955. I'm Dennis DiDomenico, son of Lois and Tom DiDomenico. Everything was being geared towards less time in the kitchen, dishwashers and garbage disposals. The convenience factor was everything.
When I was young, we'd see these commercials for Rice-a-roni. Every time we hear that jingle, my father would say, you know, your grandmother gave a rice recipe to the people who started that company. So every time you hear it, you can think of your grandmother. To be honest, we kind of thought, could that possibly be true, that this iconic American dish, could that actually be attributed to some recipe my Armenian grandmother gave to someone years ago?
I still make pilaf the way Mrs. Captanian taught me. The impact she had on me and my life, I only lived there 4 months, but it was 4 months that brought all these things together. Myself from Canada, Tommy Italian, Mrs. Captanian Armenian, all that converging in San Francisco in 1946. And out of that comes Rice-a-roni.
That story was from Hidden Kitchens, a project by the Kitchen Sisters, Davia Nelson and Nikki Silva. You can hear more of their pieces on their podcast, Fugitive Waves. You can find out more at KALW.org. And if you've heard an amazing story about the Bay Area on any other podcasts, we want to know about them. Email us at news@kalw.org and maybe we'll put them in the show. Or catch up with us on Facebook and Twitter at KALW. Because of you, we can proudly say we're listener-supported public radio. Our team includes Leela Day, Angela Johnston, Hannah Kingsley-Ma, Casey Miner, Ted Muldoon, Seth Samuel, Raja Shah, Judy Silber, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. The line producer was Nina Gensler-Debs. Our managing editor is Jen Sheehan. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by Bang Data, a side project of Bay Area MC Deuce Eclipse. You might have heard them on the hit TV show Breaking Bad. Bang Data plays at Leo's in Oakland on Saturday night. Music starts at 9 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
Yo soy el hombre que pelea por la cosa que yo quiero ver. Vas por todo lado, brindo un trago. Gamer que nas, game, dame un abrazo.
Bailo con la culebra.
Streets.